Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Buffalo Bills, maybe next year. The only podcast that will, on its former coaches and managers at all costs. My name is Scott.
I'm Frank.
I'm Paul. Did everyone hear my critical alert from Microsoft?
No.
All right, good. I'm glad I didn't blow
We did
the
now.
Yeah, but we did hear you talking about it, so that's good.
Oh, so
no.
they
Talked
got
about
that
it
done.
much less disruptive than the actual critical alert from Microsoft.
Oh
But
yeah,
now it has been this disruptive.
I was gonna say you're right. I don't feel like this has been disruptive at all to the podcast.
You guys let me get away with a good opener last week. I couldn't let Scott get away with a good one this
Yeah,
week.
exactly. No, I mean, we had a good streak there for a solid podcast of not having an extended opening that was way too meta and not particularly funny. So I'm glad
Right.
we're right back on track. Speaking of back on track, the Buffalo
Yeah.
Bills continued to roll through the sweet part, the cupcake, the burgers and fries, anything that's enjoyable to eat part of their schedule with a thorough demolishing of the hapless San Francisco 49ers, 45-16. A game that was much closer for than that score would indicate for the first half when the Bills defense were toying with the Niners as a cat toys with a mouse, but only to destroy said mouse later in the game with some very good play. Dominating on third down, keeping the Niners off the field, and then providing enough time for the Bills' rushing attack to end up putting up over 300 yards on the board, a record that had stood for almost 20
Dude,
years?
24 years, I think it was
24
92, I
years since
think. Yeah.
2012 or 92? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Obviously, a game where a lot of things went right for the Bills, and we've all seen games where playing a inferior team, that has not been the case. So no matter what, we can all be proud that the Bills did not choke this one away. So why don't we start with Frank, with your thoughts on the game?
I thought this game wasn't really that close in the first half. And I think that, and I understand that it was a 4-point game. And I know that Paul and I were interacting on Twitter, and Paul was a little more nervous than I was.
Yeah,
And what.
we'll have disagreement, which is great for a podcast.
Right. I watched that first half, and I realized, like, the score was close. But I felt like, apart from one terribly stupid blown coverage, which was clearly a blown coverage and not anything great the 49ers did, the 49ers looked, to me, looked hapless. They looked like nothing in the first half. They really did. Everything that they did seemed to be an accident, and I was really sort of I wasn't prepared to for this many points in the second half. I was fully confident going into the half that the Bills were going to put the game away. It just, I mean, really, like Kaepernick had a run for 29 yards and Hyde had one for 15. I don't even know if that was in the first half, but overall, he was not a. They just didn't do anything. They had one good pass. It wasn't a good pass either. He, broken coverage, and the guy was basically sitting there with no one for 20 yards around him, and he managed to score. He had to stop and wait for the ball and manage to score. And you don't like to see that, but really, to me, it was just a matter of the Bills, getting a little bit more of a lead, which they did in the third quarter. They get the Justin Hunter touchdown, and from there, with a more than one score lead, it became the Bills football we've seen in the last month, which is just confusing offenses and, harassing quarterbacks and stuffing everything and choking a team away with the best rushing attack in football. And so, really, at halftime, I felt very good about this game, even though it was kind of close.
Okay,
Yeah,
Paul, yeah, go ahead.
Frank had a lot more confidence than I did in the first half, but it's Frank's observation that proved more prescient. My concerns with the first half, they did have the blown coverage on the long TD. I try not to overreact to one blown play, and I didn't. I didn't blow up on Twitter at Stefan and
No.
Ronald, but I expect a little bit more out of two top cornerbacks from letting that happen. They let the, what was very telling to me was they were letting the 49ers move the ball with relative ease. Their yards per play was very impressive in that first half. They stalled on a couple drives because Kaepernick missed a deep ball And, you know, they had one other drive where they had the Bills just came up with one stop, and then the 49ers missed, I believe, a throw. But otherwise, I was thinking, man, I am not happy with this defensive game plan right now. What Frank realized was going to happen, which I didn't, was it was going to essentially mirror the Rams game to an extent. Now, the Rams came out hard in the third quarter, like San Francisco did really from the beginning of this game on offense. But then defense makes a big play, shuts them down the entire half. And that's exactly what happened, or for the rest of the game. That's exactly what happened here with the Bills defense in the second half. They it was a complete lockdown. It's funny when you look at Tyrod's stats and Kaepernick's stats, they're almost identical, but it was so clear whose game was more impressive when you watch this in person, which is why traditional quarterback stats are overrated. There's a fun offseason topic I'm sure we'll forget to discuss. So defensive side of the ball, great to see them step up in the second half. Offense, it's consistency. And again, people judge Tyrod on his numbers. I judge him on the fact that he, you know, every third down, he came up with a throw that was needed to Woods, to whomever. The Bills, I think, had converted, their first six or seven third downs or something ridiculous. When you do that, it was like the Bills Niners no punt game from years ago when the offense is in that sort of shape. So just the way the offense consistently moved the ball. They had two turnovers on, you know, one was late in the game and it didn't matter. The other was someone really, really missed a block, which obviously was the rest.
That was, again, to me, that was like somebody did something, like they blew something, and like Taylor had no real chance at that. Like he was lucky that like he didn't get killed on that play, let alone not hand off the football. Not to interrupt your points, Paul, but to me that was like a highlight of the first half, that to me was like, that probably won't happen again. Like I thought to myself, that was a mistake and someone won't do that again.
Yeah, no, and again, you have more confidence than I did in that, because I was thinking when I saw that and the blown coverage on the Kaepernick pass, I'm like, well, this is one of the days the Bills are going to keep blowing things, which has happened traditionally in the past. And I remember us losing to an inferior San Francisco team back in 2008 under similar circumstances, like Singletary coach team. So I was very, very glad that they emerged victorious. This is really a positive sign. And playing the optimist to end my segment here, I'll simply note that, let's face it, a month ago, none of us were thinking remotely 4-2 is even a possibility.
Yeah, that 2008 game, I think the difference was that Dick Geron stopped running the football, and Rex Ryan said, I'm going to keep running the football because...
Yes, that's right. We watched that game at the bar we were going to, and they put in Lossman for the second half, I remember, and we just looked at each other. Like, remember you looking at me, Frank, being like, Trent better be hurt. And he wasn't. The Bills lost that game 10-3. Thankfully, that's not this day in Bills history.
Right, and he had Lynch had like, well, it was like, I'm looking it up now, but it was something absurd, like 12 carries and 190 yards. And they just like, why did he only have 12 carries? That was the, anyway. But go ahead, Scott.
Yeah. I mean, that was a good discussion. I think the Bills, I think, again, I'm continued. Again, like Paul said, I'm continuing to be impressed by Tyrod. I thought the throws that he had to make were great, especially the ones in the red zone. The Hunter pass wasn't in the red zone. It was kind of a little bit further out than that, but that was an absolutely gorgeous ball from 34, 35 yards out, whatever it was. And then the throw to Woods to get him open, and again, in those tight windows that we always worry about in the red zone. And that's really going to be, I think, a key thing for this team. And then again, we'll have to see how they do against much more superior competition in the red zone. But when you have a good rushing offense, usually that means you're a little better in the red zone than teams that are more reliant on the pass. But I still think we will need both halves of that offense kind of going forward. One thing I wanted to was the game. And I just forgot what I was going to ask you about. So I'm going to tap dance for a bit here.
I can wow people with more stats from the 2008 San Francisco 49ers game.
Yes.
Marshawn Lynch was 16 carries for 134 yards, a long of 50. Then they threw the ball 38 times. Between Trent Edwards and J.P. Lossman, they threw the ball 38 times for just over 200 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions, and somehow, some way, 16 carries for Marshawn Lynch, another 9 amongst Roscoe Parrish, Fred Jackson, and 3 Trent Edwards rushes.
This wasn't a blowout game where they had to throw to get back into it. They lost 10-3.
right? Which compared to this week, where literally some of the reason Taylor's numbers are as low as they are is because the game was sewn up and there was no reason to throw the football because LeSean McCoy carried the ball, 19 times for 140 yards. So imagine, look how great his day was today, McCoy, and realize that Lynch had basically done that on three fewer carries, right?
Yeah. And boy, Anthony Lynn, gift from the gods, with actually sticking with the run. And saying, I like how he came out and they did call some pass plays to try and keep them on their toes, which I also think was kind of duress LeSean, because of the injury scare at the end of the first half. I didn't want to throw him right in harm's way immediately. Mm-hmm. Then once he was comfortable with LeSean, he went back to him. And I just liked that they just kept running it down their throats. Run until they stop you it's called.
And that's something I think that was a little bit where I was going to go, and I'll get into more in the run game when we get into kind of our middle of the podcast after we do three stars and get done talking about this game. But I think I was very pleased with the variety of runs that the Bills had. There was a lot of times when people think about run offenses, you think a lot about I formation or single back sets, two tight ends, and kind of your standard, your power, your zone, your stretch plays, your sweeps. You can pull a guard or something, and that's about what you can do. But actually, there's a lot of inventiveness that this offense has shown. And I think this is all stuff that Greg Roman originally drew up, and I think was in the system, but I don't think he was doing a good enough job of executing it, of keeping everything simple, and to a certain extent, just a time to keep the team moving forward on third downs, because that's the key part of a run-based offense, is that you still have to get those third downs to keep yourself on the field, so to give yourself some time to start wearing on guys, and that things are more effective in the fourth quarter. And there was a good article on The Ringer, which everyone should read, about all the different kind of formations that they used, unbalanced line, getting the ball to wide receivers on jet sweeps, getting the ball. Obviously, Tyrod has shown skill with the read option, but actually having a triple option look with Tyrod, not quite your kind of typical Navy wishbone offense, but more of kind of a read option, triple option, a shotgun read option, triple option. I guess that's what it would be. It shows that you can still have a lot of looks and be multiple and have a complex offense just with the running game, with your blocking and with your different formations. So I'm glad to see that. So hopefully, yes, that will continue. Any thoughts on the run game in this game?
No, I think you made some great points, and I like the fact that it does help you on third down and keep it third manageable, which is we learned in order for the Bills to be able to have third manageable and pick up a first down on a run, it's third and 20 or less. So I think that's so if they get to third and 23, they could be a problem running the ball, but third and 20, no problem. And we were talking about that play before the game started, the game of the podcast before it started. Just like three great downfield blocks. I think Nick O'Leary was one, Robert Woods was one. I forgot who the third was, but they all saw LeSean cut it back. I'm like, all right, I'll just put my shoulders on this guy and knock him out of it. And as you mentioned, the arc on the ringer, which I'm going through right now, Scott, that you sent us the link to, just doing a good job kind of outlining. And I won't repeat all the stuff here. Just a good job outlining how solid this offensive line play has been. And that is something. The good news about that, knock on wood, is there's no reason that should regress to a bad point. Now, they're not going to stay as effective as they have now. But like Tecmo Super Bowls, it goes later in the season, it will be harder. But there should not be an expectation for significant regression here, because it's not like they're mixing it up. They're doing stuff. Teams will eventually solve that. Or get a handle on that, but just the ability of these frontline guys allows them to largely do what they want. One thing I point out when tweeting about the game was that LeSean McCoy, 21-yard touchdown, or maybe it was, excuse me, a 12-yard touchdown. He got the ball in the Wildcat. They knew he was going to get the ball and then run with it somewhere. Didn't matter. They couldn't stop it. He went through. I don't even know if he was touched. Felton threw a great lead block, got out of his way, and then that was it.
Just to tack on to that, the remaining run defenses on the schedule, Miami is 31st. We play them twice. New England is 12th. Seattle is the best run defense at 3rd. Cincinnati 22nd. Oakland 30th. Pittsburgh 19th. Cleveland 27th. Jacksonville 7th. So most of the teams you have left on the schedule are not, are either mediocre or worse run defenses. And so, you know, if something was going to play right into your hands, like maybe it's this. I think the Jets are actually on the schedule and they are a good run. I think they're the best run defense, which maybe explains a little of the.
And hopefully they'll be phoning in their games because do we want to go ahead and just enjoy the Jets right now?
Oh, my God. What a one.
30 seconds of the Jets.
They willfully went to Geno Smith.
I know. It was there was a great tweet I saw where someone had said something like, Nation asks, why aren't the Jets putting in Geno Smith? Jets put in Geno Smith. Nation responds, oh, right. Like that. It's like you saw what he did. That's what he is. But and it's funny. Jesmyn tweeted me a question yesterday, like, how on earth did we lose to the Jets? If only we had won that game, blah, blah, blah. And I was initially going to respond, you know, I don't think the Jets are as bad as they seem. I was just going to note they had a really tough schedule. We talked in the opener that if they lost to the Bills, they could go 0-6. They just had that tough schedule, and I expected them to win still 6 or 7 games, even where they're at now. And now they made the announcement. I'm like, no, they're going to be this bad.
they've made the choice to be bad, and good for them. Play for
right,
next year.
Honestly, what good do they get winning 6 or 7 games with the quarterback on a 1-year contract? What the hell? Just let the season go. Verify that Geno Smith can't do it. Bring in a couple of the other guys you've got drafted the last couple of years. See what they can do. But good move by the Jets. But it's going to make them terrible for the rest of the year.
I think the Bills get credit. They try to let. We convinced Ryan Fitzpatrick to go down swinging, and he has gone down swinging. Exactly.
Excuse me. I got to say, though, every time the Bills win, and I look at the record, it makes me angrier and angrier that they lost to the Jets. Every time now I look at it, and I just say that fucking Jets game. The Baltimore game, too. I mean, they're ahead of Baltimore now, but really, like, first place in the AFC East and probably like first place overall in the AFC right now if they beat the Jets.
Right. But I will let's make the real point here and get out of hypotheticals, which is that would they be doing this well if they had not been so upset about the Jets game? They had Tyrod and LeSean going to the head coach, to the general manager, and saying, we got to get rid of Roman.
Yeah, but if they had
if they won that game, then I've gotten reprieve for a week or two. So I'm, you know what? And this is the way I look at it too. How on earth did we lose to the Jets is one question. We also beat the Cardinals and the Patriots, which I don't think are easily done.
Right.
So I'll take those. I'll take that exchange.
I will go back to the Patriots game. And people said that, this is going to be a theme for me in terms of how good this team is. And one of our favorites was about the playoffs, and we'll get to that. Because I think before week 8, you can say playoffs without saying the P word, because it's just all very hypothetical.
Right.
But just remember, that was the Jacoby Brissett Patriots. It was not the Jimmy Garoppolo Patriots. The Jimmy Garoppolo Patriots actually looked like a real team. The Jacoby Brissett Patriots did not. And that was the only game that he was playing for them that he started. So, okay. We will move on to 3 stars unless Frank has any final thoughts on the game.
No, other than just to reiterate, I don't care that it was the Jacoby Brissett guys, because they would be in first place with a game up on the Patriots right now, or a half game.
With a tiebreaker, yeah.
Right. I would like to be playing the Patriots in a week on even footing and actually having the half game advantage. And I guess all I'm saying is, like, that you're right. The Tom Brady Patriots are a completely different Patriots. All the more reason I wish we had beat the Jets. Right. So, a 10-7 or like a 9-6 squeaker where they still say I'm frustrated with this offense and they fire Lynn.
Fire Roman. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, Roman,
that would be,
sorry.
That would be if they,
yeah,
the Bills, that's our alternate future for the offseason. Because after a tight win against the Jets, they fire Anthony Lynn. What happens to this team?
We have a high standard here. You want to lose a game, you're fired. That's the bottom line.
Yeah. Anyway, so we'll do 3 stars. Your honorable mention, and I considered giving him a star because I think he almost deserved it, but just because he's a coach. Chip Kelly.
Chip
Kelly gets the honorable mention because I don't think this game would have been possible without him. For one, role. And that's not entirely his fault, but he certainly doesn't look like he's got the answers. That's for darn sure. Didn't look like Colin Kaepernick was really bringing... He actually was bringing a little bit to the table. I wasn't watching a lot of the Blaine Gabbert 49ers, so I'm not sure that was much of an upgrade, but certainly not something I would expect from offensive wizard Chip Kelly. That's for darn sure. And he also seemed completely mystified on how to teach his team to tackle. So I think pivotal in the outcome of this game. And then obviously, if you want to go get in the way back machine, his kind of breakup with LeSean McCoy. Again, that was potentially headed that way anyway. But regardless, that was. I'm glad LeSean McCoy is on the Bills.
Is there any doubt about this trade now? Like, is there anybody who's somewhere going, I wish we had Kiko Alonso?
Well, that's. I say, for the sake of not jinxing life, that we answer that question next week.
Very good.
Yeah,
very good.
Yeah, I know. I know we want to go down that road until after the Dolphins game.
Okay.
That is a running back issue. So, and a linebacker issue for that we know. So moving on to the actual stars. There's going to be a bit of a theme in these stars. So the third star I decided was going to be Richie Incognito. It talked earlier about how Incognito has had some difficult games this year, has had some times when he was a little slow, especially on the pass blocking side. But he went out and had a great game on Sunday. Was graded at 78.7 by Pro Football Focus. You could see him repeatedly out there as pulling a guard. McCoy, really, again, a great job by the offensive line. I have been the chief critic of this offensive line amongst the Bills commentary, as far as I'm concerned. And not just this podcast, I mean all Bills fans everywhere.
Yep.
And I certainly agree for his failure to invest in it.
Yep. I was noting, by the way, Scott, I think Frank and I have noticed some zooling on your end. Do you mind briefly logging off? And then Scott, Frank and I will analyze your points on Incognito and then welcome you back for the second star.
I suppose we can do that.
Yes.
I'll see you gentlemen in a moment.
Right. Very good. Yeah, we'll come back to three stars. Why don't we, rather than analyze that, why don't we start talking about LeSean's being pulled for injury, just to kind of keep the topics.
Yeah. So he was hurt in practice today, hamstring injury. No news on severity yet. So we literally don't know if LeSean is going to be out for months or if he'll be back at practice tomorrow. They're going to check it out. And obviously, let's face it, it could be huge if he's out because, as we've seen, this offense, as good as Tyrod has been, is relatively a one-man band, if you will. So, we certainly hope that, LeSean is, able to recover from whatever it is, that it doesn't prove to be a serious issue, and that, in fact, the Bills are able to overcome it. If LeSean is out for any period of time, well, all the optimism we've displayed through much of this podcast,
Yeah, Ryan's comments say, I'm not going to look into it, but we'll see how he comes back. Not a lot of gloom and doom, but that'll change if the hamstring doesn't improve. So, and with these Wednesday practices, a lot of times veterans, don't play anyway. Like, if you're at all, beat up, you just sit out the Wednesday or Thursday practice. And I don't think there's much for him to learn, so it might just be a matter of him, it might be a rest and go. I think that's probably what they're hoping for, is that he's either not injured or he can play limited. But it would be a blow. But do you think the way the line's playing, that a guy like Gillislee or Jonathan Williams could replicate 40% of what someone like LeSean's doing?
The question is what percentage. And
right.
See, as you see, Scott, we kind of veered off topic a little bit just to get a little more.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that was actually one of the questions that I had kind of was, and we can come back to three stars, is, exactly how much of this depends on the offensive line. And again, it's not just the line. It's Felton. It's the tight ends. It's the downfield blocking. It's the whole nine yards. And how much is LeSean McCoy? And I think we've seen, obviously, it's both. But, I think – in some ways, I think LeSean is better because the biggest things that he gets is the pass game. He's good catching the ball. He's good understanding his block so he can stay on the field longer. Gillislee, I think, is actually a very good runner. He has a very different style than LeSean does, and one that maybe isn't going to lead to quite as many kind of consistently big plays. but I think he's still going to be effective. It's just I think I would be concerned about the total offense in that kind of case.
Yeah, I would agree. I think Gillislee and Williams and, you know, can fill in, can keep it moving, but it's tough to LeSean. I mean, let's face it, without LeSean, that 3rd and 20 doesn't happen last week. It keeps that touchdown drive moving. So, you know, that's it's those little impacts on the game you don't think about. So, we'll, you know, everyone in Bills country should definitely be rooting for a healthy hammy in the near future for Mr. McCoy.
Indeed. And I sound better?
You sound great.
You sound beautiful. You sound marvelous, darling.
So
yeah, crystal reference. All right. Stars. Yeah, let's get back to 3 stars. Incognito was good.
Incognito was good. And also good was Jerome Felton.
Oh, yes.
So getting a 2nd star for an 83.2 grade from Pro Football Focus, and a lot of really good blocking. Again, it's not just Jerome Felton. It's not just the O-line. It's the downfield blocking, but the whole run game was clicking well. And again, like we were talking about a little bit before the show, you know, Felton was somebody who got cut after, you know, before the season and then was brought back on after Gronkowski showed that he had little to offer this team other than a last name. And Felton has proven to be much worth very much what we're paying him, which I'd imagine is probably a little bit less than what we started with.
Yeah, I think they got him for the veteran minimum now.
Yeah, I believe so. I looked at we're actually have more dead money for Felton than we are paying on his salary. When I checked SportTrack recently, which I would do during the podcast, but I know so I go to SportTrack, I caused myself to Zool, so I've stopped doing that.
Then by all means, let's avoid the Zooling.
Yes.
So, and then your 1st star, LeSean McCoy. He had a lot of touchdowns. He had 3 touchdowns. He had 140 yards on only 19 carries. He got injured and he came back. He also had 2 catches for 2 additional yards, which is not great. We are not going to hold that against him. He has, again,
EJ also missed him on one that might have been a big game, but, you know, EJ, by the way, EJ, 3rd and 8 run. Well done, EJ. We see you, buddy.
Yeah, and again, LeSean not the only one who's running the ball. Gillislee, EJ, Tyrod, obviously, all having good days, you know, running the ball. But LeSean obviously is the one who's, again, maybe probably clearly playing with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder this Sunday, literally and figuratively. But I think, actually, it's not really literally and figuratively. It's figuratively twice.
Yes.
Yes, 2 chips on his shoulder. He played well, and I'm glad he played well, and that's why he gets the 1st star, and I know he's happy about that. Is that 2 weeks in a row for him, I think?
I believe so.
Yeah, he's cleaning up in stars right now.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean,
we should let him know at CutOnDime 25 or whatever his Twitter handle is. Absolutely. Like, hey, just so you know, all the prestigious awards you've received, two in a row from Scott on
that's rare air. Stars.
Yeah.
That's rare air for any
I don't
That is Colton Schmidt territory, right?
I was going to say, that's like Brian Mormon. Like, that's the Brian, one more first star in a row. And I think it's like the Brian Mormon Memorial 3 stars.
Yeah. I mean, people have definitely been on the list 3 times in 2 or 3 times in a row. But 2 first stars in a row, that is unusual. And to be fair, a little bit on the quality of the opponent here, as the Bills won both of these games kind of pretty handily. So. We will move on, and we will talk a little bit about – we already talked about LeSean McCoy's injury, right? So we're good there?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. So then we will briefly talk about Shaq Lawson for a moment. Shaq Lawson, I don't know if you guys remember. He was our 1st-round pick this year in the draft.
Yes, who did we have before God, who's our 2015 1st-rounder? Why can't I think of who it was? 2014 was Sammy. 2013 was EJ. 2015, we didn't have one because we traded it. So we literally have had no contributions from our 1st-rounders really this season. No notable contributions since 2012, the 2012 1st-round pick, who was it Stephon? Is that right? Right?
Probably. Yes.
Yeah, see if you had asked that.
It is Stephon. Yes, it is Stephon. I verified.
Okay.
So, yeah, they have.
Very good.
Which is another interesting topic we'll do some other time, by the way, is like how the Bills have largely been building more of a winner through the draft, through trades and free agency versus the draft, which is the exact opposite of how you're supposed to do it. But another topic for another day.
Proven the experts wrong. So Shaq Lawson coming back. Obviously, I don't think anyone
Can I ask you a quick question before I not to derail this again? Can he actually come back if he's not been here yet?
Now we're getting
to play. I think the question is whether or not he is going to play based on the fact that he has never been in an NFL practice and has no concept of the defense.
Yeah, it's just people. A lot of people have, not just you, but a lot of people say he's coming back, and I get it. But to me, it's like he's never really
Let me
here.
Finish my point, Frank.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not, because I need to cut you down at the knees in order to make my point.
Understood. And now that we've done that,
I apologize.
I will continue and say, coming back, but should he be rushing back for what is almost certainly a winnable game, you know, a road game in the division, never easy, but the Bills are 3-point favorites on the road here, and the Dolphins admittedly coming off of a good win against the Steelers, in which Ben Roethlisberger was hurt. By the way, we need to check into when he's coming back, because it would be just
They've said 4 to 6, so we'll see. That
could be better. So like the NFL that he misses the Patriots but comes back for the Bills. That's right. Definitely in the house of realm of possibility.
The house of cards. Frank Underwood.
The Bills of the season. Anyway, where was I going with this? So what do you guys think? I mean, do you want him back for the Patriots game with 10 days of NFL practices? Like, do you want him – like, is it better to have Shaq Lawson on the field for the Patriots than the 53rd man on the roster right now?
Good question.
Our good question music that we put, out there. I heard that. Yeah, I'd like to jump in and say, I would think it is. Jarrell Worthy is probably the guy. Jarrell Worthy is my understanding. Was it McCray? Oh, yeah, good point. Have you heard much about him this year? I certainly.
Yeah.
So I think Lawson, just with his ability alone, would present a bit of an upgrade. Again, we've talked in the past about what a good job. You know, no matter what anyone's opinion of Whaley, he has done an excellent job of turning over the bottom of the roster. Heck, remember, Bakari Rambo is one of those pickups, and he gave the team two good seasons as a guy who they just picked up off the street. And that is something, Mr. Whaley is continually good at. And I think, you replace a guy at the bottom of your roster with a Shaq Lawson, who, even while unproven, unless he I can't mention the name, of course, without jinxing his entire career, but unless he proves to be as overrated as the Bills' 2008 first-round draft pick in terms of pass rushing skill, he is going to present almost an instant upgrade in the rotation, because as good as Alexander and Hughes have played this season, they are only out there for, I think, like 56 and 68% of the snaps, respectively, or something like that. So this gives you another good guy in that rotation.
I think here are the Bills' inactives from last week. Gerald Christian, and then Marcel Darius, Chantrell Henderson, Cardale Jones, Cyrus Quandjo, and then two guys, Patrick Lewis and Gabe Ickard. I think we could remove Patrick Lewis, Gabe Ickard, both centers, or Gerald Christian as a tight end. I know they're all on the offensive side of the ball, but I feel like if you are inactive and have been inactive more than twice this year, why are you on this team? And instead of Shaq, right? Like, there has to be room to move somebody off of this team to put him on this week. If it's literally just like you're going to come in and your job is to, like, this week he must have been able to learn four plays, right? Like four defensive plays. Like I have to imagine anybody from Wednesday to Sunday could learn four plays.
He has had the playbook. He has been able to look at the playbook and watch the film and go to the meetings, I think. Right.
Yes.
So,
yeah. It's not like
so
Marcel
it's just physically going through the motions.
Right. So what I'm saying is, like, he should be able to come in and be like, "All right, it's your turn. You do one of the four plays that we told you about and rush the quarterback." Right. Like it's almost like Lawrence Taylor, like, who basically didn't know the playbook and just literally, like, he's admitted, like, when he didn't know the playbook, he ran as hard as he could at the quarterback or whoever had the ball, and so. you could at least do that a couple times in the game. And if he's, you know, if that gets him a little bit of prep for the Patriots game, all the better. So I would put him in this week if there's any chance at all that he could do anything.
Okay. And there's also the potential of re-injuring whatever the shoulder thing is, too.
So. Yeah, that's going to be there against the Patriots and every week.
That's true. Okay. Paul, any additional thoughts?
I'm not poo-pooing you, Scott.
No. I think this is a good opportunity. I just do want to mention, too, like what an ideal set of circumstances this is to get Lawson back where there is not instantly, oh, man, he's got to come back and rescue this defense like we were thinking after the Jets game would be potentially needed, because Lorenzo Alexander has done a great job, a much, much better job than we expected. Hughes has been his usual solid self. So he just has to come in and be a contributor. And that's definitely an ideal situation to work him in, not, you know, be our salvation first round pick.
Yeah, that's definitely interesting to where we were kind of in kind of thinking about this team and watching the draft. Like we all thought that we had a lot riding on Ragland and Lawson, because we had lost Williams and we had lost Bradham, and those were the guys we drafted to replace them essentially. And they were replacing guys who had been to Pro Bowls. I mean, I think Bradham maybe got, and I don't think Bradham ever got to a Pro Bowl, but he was a really good linebacker for this team. And
yeah, he's doing well for the Eagles this year. I've been looking at him, following him a little bit. Ron Brooks has two.
But
sorry, that's right. I know. I just had to mention Ron. This weekend, former Bills now playing for the Eagles update. Yeah.
Imagine Bradham never made a play ball or a Pro Bowl.
Good to know. Thank you, Frank. So regardless, it's funny that how quickly things have changed from where we thought we were going to need these guys to literally we're 4-2 without them.
Yes.
And without Darius.
Right.
Kind of stunned by the duct tape and kitchen what do you call it, twine, something, bailing wire, bailing wire and duct tape that this team is apparently made of, and stitching together a decent season, and we can get into that more in our next podcast, maybe next homespun saying.
Yes. Or maybe next butchered homespun saying.
That's a much better.
Yes. We can open a bottle of worms on that one and, you know, see there.
A bottle of worms, yeah.
A bottle of worms. That's what we'll go with. Come on, Frank, you gotta butcher one. Mix two cliches up so you can come up with. The pressure's on.
You gotta get in there and give it all you have and throw for a home run as hard as you can. It's been a real slam goal.
You got to put the ball through the ring on that one.
Yeah.
oh boy. Okay. So let's move on.
Wait, it would have to be your ball. That's
what it would have to be. Let's move on. And I've lost the agenda because I had to.
Oh right. Yes.
But that's okay.
Yeah. Facebook and Twitter questions. Was that it next? Or
we could remark Facebook on. Yeah, Facebook, Twitter questions. All right. So I'm pulling up Facebook now.
Yeah. I have Facebook up right now. Oh. And we'll start with James' question, which was realistically, where do you think we stand as a playoff team after today's win? Brian said he thinks we'll be fighting for the last wild card in week 17 and hoping the Jets and Ravens loss don't bite us in the ARSE.
The arse.
Which is an English ass. Yes. Must beat the middling teams and pray for one of the top ones to make mistakes. This is, again, we're not going to – we can't say the P word because it is so early. But if you were looking early, you would notice that actually the AFC West looks pretty deep with the Raiders, Broncos, and Chiefs all playing relatively well. You would notice that the AFC South is a garbage fire per usual.
Right. And the Chargers, by the way, are ranked very high on certain index rankings that they are a team that could improve. So that goes to your point on the depth in that whole AFC West.
Yeah. So, and then you go to the AFC North and you have kind of a, you have the Steelers, but then you also have the Steelers now facing Roethlisberger without Roethlisberger for 4 to 6 weeks. So,
And a Bengals team and then that's obviously, a Bengals team that's going to win more than a third of their games this season, which is where they're
right
now. So there is a growing thought out there that the Bengals may be taking a bit of a step back, and obviously their 2-4 record may have something to do with that. But and obviously the AFC East is the Bills and the Patriots. So there are some teams out there who are a little bit dangerous, but also the Bills are 4-2. And again, they would be, if they were in the NFC, they would have a clear shot at the playoffs. But do you guys have any thoughts on kind of where do you see this team kind of ending up, just briefly? Because I know we're going to spend the rest of the season talking about this.
So. Yeah, I don't want to comment on where I think they'll end up yet. I do think that if LeSean McCoy is healthy, and the fact that they are in fifth overall, that they would be the first, they would be hosting a playoff game, ladies and gentlemen. Today, they would be hosting a playoff game. Just put that in your – that's baseball. They would not be hosting a playoff game. But they would be in the playoffs, and they would be going – sorry. I was thinking they would be hosting another wild card team because I'm –
they'll be playing the Cleveland Indians.
Right. But they would be – they would be playing they would not be playing New England. They would be playing the Raiders or the Steelers or the Texans, depending on tiebreakers. They're in the driver's seat. Okay, there are six more wins on the schedule if they want them. Okay, they play Miami twice. They play the Jets again. They play other bad teams. They can get to 10 wins.
Browns.
There you go. Miami, Jets, Browns. That's 8 wins there. Okay, like you need those games, which gives you a clue as what I'm saying about this week's matchup at the end of the podcast. You have to find 2 more wins on the schedule to get to 10. And if you get to 10 wins and you don't make it, like, that's terrible luck. But right now, they're ahead of the two teams. Like, the Jets' loss is only going to matter with regards to conference. The Ravens' one, I guess, still could be a head-to-head issue, but they're in the driver's seat now. They can dictate to the other teams what the pace is. And so it's up to them to not, you know, fall off the pace here.
And they could just beat the Patriots and win the division too. So
right, that's the other thing. Like,
that option is out there, by the way. You know,
right? Even if they don't beat the Patriots, they would only be, you know, 2 games back, and it would depend on, you know,
and it would be even for one, so you wouldn't have to get a game better than them. You would just have to take another of the tiebreakers.
Right.
Move on, and I agree. I mean, Paul, do you have any thoughts?
No, not particularly. I largely agree with Frank that, you know, win those 4 games that you really should win. That's 8 out of 10 victories. And then of the other 6 that you could win, or maybe even you're an underdog in a lot of those, you know, win 2 of those 6, and then you're in the driver's seat.
Yeah, I think they could beat – well, there's a team that I think that we all thought they could not beat at all. Like, it was in the dead no effing way category that I think they can beat. And it's not the Patriots, a different team. And in just a few weeks, like before the bye, I'm going to make my bold prediction, provided everyone's still healthy and playing the way they're playing.
Seahawks.
I won't confirm or deny that, but I would say that the nation would definitely be, it would be the only football game to watch. And I think they could beat that football team. So,
interesting.
There you go.
Okay, so we'll move on. And we will move on to our next comment, which is Brian, who I think we talked about this a little bit, which was how many of us thought at 14-13 it was going to go down the wire. I was definitely one of those. I could definitely see we've had plenty of games where we let bad teams hang around, even if we do beat them. And God knows we've had plenty of games where we lost. And I think Paul was more of that opinion and Frank was less so.
Frank was the one optimist.
Are you guys – okay, can I change the question a little? Are you guys feeling better about this team, though? Do you feel like if it's – there really, so if they're up like – if they're up at halftime on Miami 5 or 6 points and it's another – you know, like they've scored – it's like 17-14 or 17-12 at half, you'd still feel like, man, they could really choke it away against Miami.
Oh, absolutely.
You really
– on the road, 100%.
Okay. Okay. I'm not saying they couldn't.
Against a team that just beat the Steelers? Yeah.
And, you know. Well, they beat a beat-up Steelers team.
They can beat a beat-up Bills team if they can beat a beat-up Steelers team.
That's true. I'm obviously would never say, like, the Bills are unsinkable at this point. But at this point, I think if they have a lead, like, they – against a bad team, like, if I had the option, I would double my bet at halftime. I know that's in like some Las Vegas casinos. You can walk
you
in.
You can't
like,
do that. Yeah, absolutely. That's how they really make the money.
You can double. Degenerates like me that are like, yeah, now I'm going to double down on Buffalo, right?
And let's be honest, here, we all know
of that is bizarre.
We're right at the beginning of what's going to be a 10-game Browns winning streak because Cleveland teams just can't stop winning now. Cleveland team heard, fan just going to win that, all the time.
I heard a rumor that Johnny Manziel was forced to ingest and take in whole the entire Cleveland curse. And now that he is expelled from the city, that is why they are winning. That that he is now the manifestation of the Cleveland curse, and that's why these other teams are winning. Just saying.
Could be it. And speaking of scheduled talk, Phil, who's our last Facebook questioner, had some thoughts on for 9-7, and that, you know, if you just kind of swap the first four games, then you're back to where we were, which is 2-2 after the first four. And then we have the easy part of the schedule where we pick up three easy wins. And then we have the hard part of the schedule, which immediately follows, where we could potentially very easily lose three in a row. And so he points out that we just need one of those three of the Patriots, Seahawks, and Bengals. And then we have a much better chance of getting into that.
Into the peas, yes.
Yeah, into the peas. Maybe we'll just start doing it now in this podcast. Are there any Twitter questions of note before we move on?
Not too much of note. We addressed Jasmine's on, you know, if we only beat the Jets. Steven noted how, you know, O'Leary, Powell, and Woods had critical. Thank you, Steven. I couldn't remember who the other one was besides O'Leary and Woods. It was Powell. You know, we'd liked, you know, some questions about Hughes letting his second sack slip away, but I did note to Steven, the positive of that is he didn't overreact to it when Kaepernick slipped in the end zone. He didn't take a stupid personal foul penalty later on. So it's been nice not to see those out of Hughes now for several weeks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so great job there. You know, Steven also noted, hey, it's the secret of the Bills' new success. They play only mediocre teams with bad QBs. And I said, well, it's helped for sure, but there's a lot of mediocre teams with mediocre QBs.
So, more than usual, yeah.
So you have that opportunity. So even if that's the case, it won't inhibit the Bills that much. You know, Brian, in addition to his Facebook comments, had one on Twitter about, you know, is the Heat going to be in for the Bills next week? I don't think so much. A lot of these guys are from the South, so yeah. We'll see how it goes. And, yeah, that's most of it. Thanks again to everyone else who I chatted with during the game, Ryan, both Ryans, Orlando, Jasmine, Dean, and of course Frank, as well as some people who favored me, some new follows. So what we had some porn bots unfollow us. We're back under 200 followers. If you're out there, listen, you know, spread the word to your friends and also to your porn bots.
I have a thought to get us back on in the porn bots' good graces by the end of the podcast.
Okay,
we'll get to that in a minute.
Is it the constant use of the P word? Because that's been all over the news lately. Playoffs, obviously, is what I mean.
Yes.
Just to piggyback on the one comment about poor quarterback play, some people are speculating that's why the NFL ratings are down, is because a lot of these night games are dogs. And also, Sal Capaccio has been sort of cobbling together his theory recently between his articles and some of his radio appearances that – because the league is now built to stop the short passing game, because the short passing game has been so successful with the Mannings and the Roethlisbergers and the Bradys. Right. Sorry. The one guy I couldn't remember, right? Brady. Because now you have middle linebackers who are like a little over 200 pounds. It actually benefits a team like Buffalo that is got this really progressive and hard running football game because they can't tackle the way they used to. So I think it's a little premature to sort of say that there's a sea change in the NFL, but perhaps Buffalo is taking advantage of, you know, what we might call a market fluctuation or a, you know, yeah.
Or market fuckuation.
Market fuckuation.
Fuckuation.
Right. You know, like, we're in a little dip here where, like, this is the right time. Like, quarterbacks are all down across the league, and so it might be the right time to have a strong defense and a good running game.
You're in the market, you want to buy on run games and offensive linemen and fullbacks.
Right, and then sell at the end of the year, like in 2 years. When, like,
sell in week 17 when the Bills enter the playoffs, because that's
right.
Where we go. It's at that point, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, why did we do this day in Bills history? Because
sure.
I do want to get the porn bets back on our side, and I have something that might help.
Excellent. So this was an interesting day to pick because the Bills in the non-playoff era are 3-0 on this day. In fact, they have not lost on October 19th since 1980. So you have to go back 36 years. So October 19th has been a good day. I thought about talking about the most recent one. which was back in 2014, the 17-16 win over the Vikings, which we all remember for a 4th-and-20 where Scott Chandler made a great play to catch a ball from Kyle Orton to keep the final drive alive. And then Sammy Watkins had a big touchdown, which followed a huge Chris Hogan catch after the Bills had taken a questionable intentional grounding penalty. That's all from memory, by the way. So patting myself on the back. And they pulled off a great win and starting to go undefeated against the NFC. It put them 3-0 against the NFC, exactly where they are now. And then they wiped out the toughest team they would have to play in the NFC, Green Bay, later that year. Are you hearing me? 2016 Bills, Seattle's coming up. So I thought about that game. Nah, the 2003 game against Washington, vaguely remember it. So we're going to stick with one. And I mentioned to the guys for the podcast, even though it's a Bills win, it's a depressing one to talk about for a couple of reasons. So we're going to go back to Sunday, October 19th, 2008, 8 years ago. If memory serves, we all were watching this game at the bar together. I can't remember if that's true, because what I remember most about this game against the Chargers is, ironically, the power went out. Three helium balloons. Yes. Almost derailed the game, knocked out a TV feed for nearly three quarters in some areas. Thankfully, not where we were. Well, it did knock out the feed because they would put the camera on the scoreboard to let you know how much time was left on the clock and what the score of the game was, because they had no graphics and they didn't have the announcers either. They just had a working camera and would flash to and from, you know, the time and the score to the field, so you would know what was going on. So that was crazy. The lights went out in the Bills' locker room. The game was shown in 37% of the country, so that was a huge outage. Trent Edwards is on the sideline playing catch with J.P. Lossman. All an interesting side story to why this is depressing, which is that the Bills won this game over the eventual division champion Chargers of the AFC West, and this pushed the record to 5-1. And you're thinking, well, what's so depressing about this? That's
I'm really not.
Yeah, I think Bills fans might remember why this is, in fact, so very depressing. So 5-1, not dissimilar to the 4-2 they are now. Trent Edwards, I'm trying to pull up his stats. My computer's freezing a bit, but I somewhat remember them. There we go. 25 of 30, 261 yards, a touchdown, a 114 QB rating. Marshawn and Fred combined for over 100 yards on the ground. He was 2 weeks removed from a concussion. There was a huge Kavika Mitchell interception that sealed this game late. And all of us were saying, wow, this is it. Finally, this was a team that no one thought they could beat, but they beat them. They've gone to 5-1. Jerron's extension had just been announced the previous week. And he wouldn't even confirm it, but then they came back from that, and then it's like, wow, this is the team that is trending upwards. The New York Times article, not meaning to depress us, but doing so anyway, noted that the Bills would start the AFC East portion of their schedule the following week against Miami. How did the Bills do against the AFC East that year, guys? You remember how many games they won against the AFC East?
Was that the 0-6?
That would be 0. That would be 0-6. They would go against the AFC in their final 10 games. And then of the other four, they were nice enough to win two of those games. So that was the beginning of the end, was this game. Or actually, no, it was the end of the beginning. The beginning of the end would have been the next week in Miami when they lost a lead in the fourth quarter on a safety. So, yeah, the Bills win this game 23-14. The crowning achievement of Trent Edwards' career, really his best NFL game and arguably his last good NFL game. He didn't really have any games after this where you thought, wow, this guy knows what he's doing. Congratulations to the Bills on this, and let us hope, for God's sake, for our sake, God doesn't care. Let's hope for our sake that this is not analogous to what's going to happen to the Bills for the rest of this season, because if we'd had a podcast in 08, we would have been talking just as highly about the team as we are today. So this is why we are very, very cautious in our projections. So many different trivia questions I could use in this. All right, here's one. There were two The two Chargers in this game, I'll get you got a 1-2 chance here. There were two Chargers in this game who did not do much in the receiving game. One caught a pass for 8 yards. The other caught 2 for 7 yards. And neither of them have names that I can pronounce. Can you name either of these two guys whose names I cannot pronounce?
That's not really fair, because who knows what you can pronounce and cannot pronounce?
Let's see. I could give you an alternative question, which is
Antoine Gattis.
That might be how you pronounce it. So I think you might be right.
All right, that's fine. Ask the question again from the beginning, and then I'll give it a good go here.
Two Chargers receivers didn't do much in the receiving game, catching one pass for 8 yards, another 2 for 7 yards. I will give you some hints on either of these guys. One, I believe, is a tight end. Yes, was a tight end. Drafted by St. Louis, played in the year till 2010, ended his career as a fullback after playing tight end and wide receiver with Chicago, did finish with 103 career starts and 115 career receptions. So a name that you might remember, but since he was in the NFC for much of his career, it might be difficult. The other guy ended his career with Miami, played 4 games for them, played from 07 to 2012 with San Diego, Carolina, and Miami. Also listed as a fullback and wide receiver. So an interesting skill set here. I have never heard of this guy. So if you can name either of them, kudos to you. Or you're looking at Pro Football Reference like I am.
No, I'm just going to punt on this. I have nothing. Rocket Ishmael and Don Beebe. Sure.
Good guesses, both. This was, by the way, the most unfair trivia question I've ever had. So it's totally, this is what happens when I don't prepare one in advance.
I'm going to say Ivan Grozny, otherwise known as Ivan the Terrible, 17th century Russian czar. And I'm going to say Sibra Paruncular, the beetle species.
All right.
Described by Bruning in 1975.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And I think, Scott, I'm pretty sure you're right on both. I'm going to say them phonetically,
yes.
Just how they look, but I think you're right with both answers. One, the one I haven't heard of, Legedu Nani, L-E-G-E-D-U is the first name, N-A-A-N-E-E is the last name, Legedu Nani. And the other is Brandon Manumaliuna.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know Manumaliuna. Yeah,
right.
He was a guy for a while.
He was
a
guy. Yeah, he did stuff. So,
yeah.
Yep. So those were the two guys whose names I couldn't pronounce. That was
all right.
This Day in Bills History, October 19th, 2008. We'll call it the end of the beginning of the hope that was 2008.
Yeah, that's when they signed Dick Turan to the extension. Yep. I bought my Trent Edwards jersey.
Yep. We're all in.
Lots of bad decisions there. Thankfully, thankfully Frank only wasted $80 and not millions of dollars.
Right. He had bounced back from the Arizona game, and I thought, okay, like that was it, right? Like he came back from that game and diced up San Diego, and they shit the bed.
Yep. And so before we get to the Dolphins game, there was one other thing. You know, there were a lot of incidents this Sunday, and we didn't go into it with Kaepernick and the fans and the USA chant.
And the guy drinking out of the other guy's butt.
I think it was a woman's butt, actually.
It was a woman's butt, Frank, and thank you for stepping on it, because I was going to bring up that as the...
Oh, well, that wasn't on the agenda anywhere. Oh, no, you just linked to it. I'm an idiot.
Yeah. It's okay, folks. We're professionals.
We'll edit. Scott, Frank will edit this out.
Yeah, and of course I won't. I should, but I won't. I really will take this moment to apologize, Scott, for stepping on it. And you do, in fact, I owe you one gut punch. You get to sock me one in the stomach next time you see me, because that was a dick move. I was looking at something else, and I am sorry.
I have stepped on so many of your jokes, I don't even know. But, anyway, there is this guy drinking booze out of this girl's butt.
That was the story. It was pretty awesome.
That was, we actually...
Find it.
Yeah, it was put on. It was tweeted. I forgot who tweeted. Was it Jasmine or Ryan? It might have been Ryan who tweeted. I can't remember who tweeted it, but it was tweet us in Buffalo Rumblings. And I see now that the tweet has been removed, so whatever site it was on is now long gone. But that was what do you say on that? But again, hopefully, porn bots are listening to this and you realize this is kind of a
porn bots. This is for you. That female judging strictly by a not a great angle cell phone video. Stuff to say, and obviously I'm a married man and don't care about other women anymore, but she looked like she might have been nice looking, so who's to say?
I am still not drinking out of anyone's butt, dude.
I agree with that. Like, I'm just saying, for the porn bots out there,
yeah,
they don't
sure
really care. They don't, this is just a different fetish for, we're just to get different porn bots now.
I just want to say, God damn it, Bill Sands, we like, the focus was on the team, we were having a good time, and someone had... If you want to drink alcohol out of somebody else's butt, don't film it. Don't do it in a parking lot.
You want to do it in the privacy of your home,
right?
And it's consensual, by all means.
Because you know why? I will bet dollars to donuts that if you ask those two people or the people who filmed it, like what they thought of Colin Kaepernick, they would have said something like, he's an idiot and is distracting from the team and... Like, rightly, they would have been really mad about, like, how he's not being a professional and not being – and he's, like, distracting from the team and all this other stuff. They would have come up with all that shit. And it's like, the story is about you this week because you drank out of somebody's butt. So, like, walk the walk if you're going to
– Yeah, it's Go ahead.
Don't scold Colin Kaepernick, drink alcohol from the butt with the other. Don't.
He was kind of popping in and out there on this end, which makes it almost better.
Deadspin's
article. Oh, even better. The point is, stay out of my booze.
Deadspin's article at the end does note, for any other NFL teams.
What was I yelling about?
For any old man Frank.
Yeah.
Sorry, Paul. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, for any other NFL team's fan base, this might be surprising. For Bills fans, it's week 6. So I think that is an apt summary of it. And the first comment is, your move, Detroit.
And there was one later that was good. And this is just reading a Deadspin comment section. That's what the podcast is.
Yeah, we should just write. Next week,
welcome
we'll
to reading Deadspin comments. Yes.
But it was a good one. It was like, what if this is a ploy by Bills Mafia and the Buffalo Chamber of Commerce to distract from the kind of, you know, dog whistle racism of, you know, people, you know, burying Colin Kaepernick, you know, tackling him like when he's wearing a tackling dummy, not him, but a tackling dummy wearing his jersey, and with, you know, him in like the sniper's rifle crosshairs on the T-shirt. You know, and that this is really just a plan to move that to the back pages so that, you know, just drinking out of people's butts becomes what people think about when they think of Buffalo. So, team, but one that works. We're talking about it, as they say. We're also talking about Dolphins Bills next week.
Speaking Bills out of drinking points out of somebody's ass, the Dolphins are the tequila shot being poured down the backside of the AFC East.
At least that's what they were before last week's shocking win over the Philadelphia Steelers.
Philadelphia Steelers.
I almost was able to transition out of that. they were looking pretty terrible. They had lost to the Pats, obviously. They had beaten the Browns in overtime, which is saying as much about the Dolphins as it does about the Browns. And then they lost to, again, 2-4 Cincinnati. And the Tennessee Titans, who are not quite hapless, but certainly not a good squad. But then they do get the win against the Steelers at 30-15. Paul, I remember on Twitter, was kind of glad that they had beat the Steelers in the theory that maybe now the Bills would take this game a little more seriously.
Yep.
And trying to avoid the trap game. Oh, why don't we start with Paul? And Paul, why don't you give us your thoughts on the three-point favorite Bills headed to
Yeah, I'd be happy to. My first thought is Scott actually read something I said on Twitter, which is the first time that's ever happened. So I
read it all the time. It's just usually not important enough or funny enough to bring up. So
no, that's a fair point. Can't argue that. Yeah, well, and the other reason that it's good that the Dolphins win this game is, you know, you're going to spend more time looking at a team's most recent film footage, and the Bills are going to look at some film against the Steelers and be like, this is the Dolphins doing a lot of things right to beat a superior football club. So they're going to see the Dolphins at their best on the most recent film they look at. So that's always going to be a plus because you're just going to be better prepared from a totally objective standpoint. So, I mean, let's face it, this game, it's a losable game. You know, the Bills are favored for a reason. They haven't been favored on the road in 9 years. But, you know, at the same time, they are expected to win. Will LeSean be healthy? That's a huge question. Whether he plays or whether he's limited by his injury could be a huge factor. But let's be honest. Look at the skill set on Miami's side. They have a high-performing Kiko Alonso right now. Good for them. They've got Tannehill being Tannehill. They've got a good running game, but it's not stellar by any means. And they just lost their starting safety for the season, so they have all these challenges as well. I think I just have to go with the superior talent in this game. I think the Bills are a superiorly, to make up a word, talented team. I think they are going to be well prepared. I don't think they're going to overlook a divisional opponent on the road, especially one that just came off a win over a team that we all agreed was probably going to beat the Bills at the beginning of this season. So I'm going to say the Bills are well prepared for this game. I think it's going to be a close one. I'm going to say 23-20, the Bills take this game.
35-14. Bills are going to beat the shit out of the Dolphins.
All right.
They got nothing. Everyone's overreacting because they beat the Steelers. The Steelers were a little dinged up. The Dolphins had a point of pride. They've had their point of pride now, and they're just going to go back to being a terrible team. Ryan Tannehill has never played well against the Bills. That's going to continue. This Dolphins defense is a mess. That's going to continue. Provided LeSean McCoy plays, the Bills are going to win by more than one score, okay? They're going to win by 10 points at least. And I got full faith and credit that they're going to do this and go into the Patriots game that they really could lose. But they're going to go in 5-2, and they're going to look to be, you know, 5-3 or, you know, I'm sorry. Yeah, 5-3, 5-4, either 5-4 or 6-3 at the bye. And to do that, they've got to beat the Dolphins. This is a good Bills team. This is a good Bills team that can do a lot of things right. And they have had a taste of success. They've beaten four bad teams. They can beat a fifth one. And, you know, so here we go. Let's go, Buffalo.
You said there was a word before you said Bills team, and it started with a G.
It's an adjective. It describes a team that is not bad.
Interesting. Not bad.
It's a good Bills team.
Younger or
It's a good team. Is it a great team? Probably not. Is it better than a bad team? Yes. And is it the type of team that can beat a bad team? Absolutely. So, I don't think it's going to be a close game. I think that I always think it's going to be a close game because I'm scared that it's going to be a close game, and I don't want to be scared that it's a close game anymore. Maybe I'm jinxing them, but I don't care. Bills are going to beat the Dolphins, and it's not going to be pretty. It's going to be ugly in Miami. People will be fired after this game. That's what I'm saying.
Oh wow. Frank calling the Bills a rainmaker.
What's his name that used to play for us? The big fat guy on the front. Yeah, him. He's going to say something after the game about how he's disappointed in the defensive scheme. He's going to have a complaint about the game. At minimum. He's going to say something like, you know, why aren't they using me correctly? And it's because you're a fat piece of shit that sucks now. That's why.
That has been the talk for people who have not been following. There was a little thing on Buffalo Rumblings a little while ago about how there was concerns about Mario Williams' effort in Miami. And that
he might try hard for a half, and then when it doesn't work, like, he's going to quit. Like he always does.
Did you guys notice the nickname that Buffalo Rumblings has given to Mario Williams?
No.
Mar Will, because he half-asses everything. So it's just half a name. Mar Will.
I am going to take the Bills too. I think that Frank might be right. I think this might be a good team.
Scott is the best picker, I think, by the way, having picked two games right.
Yeah. I think we all picked them last week and they won.
We all did. We did. I finally got off the schneid.
Pick them either, yeah. I am thinking this might be a good team that the Bills are. The problem is that being a good team does not guarantee that you make the playoffs, because I feel like we've had teams that are as good as this team in the last 15. But that's a story for another week. Anyway, yes. This Dolphins game, I would say we are going to win. I am a little more concerned that their defense, especially Mario, will have something to play for. I think, you know, their offense obviously had a nice game last week against the Steelers. Jay Ajayi, who's the running back, was, I guess, offensive player of the week in the AFC last week. So that's a little bit concerning to me. But at the same time, I feel like the Bills have enough going on. Again, I think the talent's there. As Paul pointed out, the safety for Miami's gone for the rest of the season. They also have Jordan Cameron could be out for this game for a concussion. So I think the Bills are just playing too well right now, even on the road, even with a kind of motivated Mario Williams. I think Tannehill can't put them over the top, and I see the Bills winning. I don't know if it's going to be quite as much of a blowout. I will say a solid road win at 24-17. Nothing too crazy, but certainly something to put us into the Pats game with some that thing that doesn't exist that Frank's always talking
about. Big Mo. Well, it exists if you have it. It's just not real if you don't.
Yeah, 100%. It's real in a physical – in physics. It's not real.
Yes, absolutely.
In sports. But anyway, if you would like to talk about physics or sports or movies or things that you would drink out of other people's rear ends –
particularly if it's the last thing. Yes.
Particularly if it's the last thing, feel free to tweet at Paul or email Frank or go on Facebook, because frankly at this point Frank does more Facebook posts than I do because I'm lazy and I am bad at this podcast thing. So,
You are now the asshole between which alcohol pours.
Poured down. Facebook.com/BeeblesMNY, BeeblesMNY at gmail.com. At BeeblesMNY on Twitter, and yes. Google BeeblesMNY or Google Buffalo Bills Podcast, and you will find us. And feel free to send us questions, tell your friends, root for the Bills. Josh, I believe, was in Sioux City, and we did not get to his Facebook question because it was just excitement about the next time that we're coming to Sioux City. And when we are in Sioux City next, Josh, was that his name? We will be looking you up, and thanks for listening.
It was weird. We were all just there the day before you posted. I'm so sorry.
I know. We should have called him because I feel like it's funny because I feel like he had the same post last year. I feel like it was a Dolphins game where he ended with Squish the Fish. So if so, I love the consistency. So, yeah.
Full disclosure, we were not in Sioux City. But I had a roommate from Iowa. And he rooted for one of the two big Iowa schools. He would kill me.
Iowa or Iowa.
Which one's the Hawkeyes? He was a Hawkeye.
It was the black and gold Hawkeyes, who the Badgers play on Saturday after last week's crushing defeat at home against Ohio State, which I'm still getting over. Anyway, so thanks, everybody, and we will see you next week. I am Scott.
I'm Frank.
There you go.
Good night.